Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. Tonight, our guest is Max Rubin, who, in addition to being a wit and raconteur, has hosted the Blackjack Ball for 17 years. We'll be talking to Max about those Blackjack Balls shortly. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. I have a heart-shaped pin attached to my shirt. I've never done an entire hour-long radio show with a heart on before, and I'm really excited about it. Now, usually my co-host is Richard Munchkin. Yesterday was his anniversary, and he lets his wife decide whether or not he can come out and play with us. I guess Nelia's answer was no. He'll be back next week. In the meantime, filling in for Richard is Arnold Snyder.
Good evening, Bob.
Arnold has been a guest on our show 3 times and a co-host once or twice. Welcome back.
Hey, I'm starting to feel like it's home here.
Good. Of the 17 Blackjack Balls, about how many have you been to?
Well, you know, Max might remember exactly. I recall missing 2 of them.
So a high percentage.
Yeah.
All right. And Munchkin thinks it's the party of the year. Do you attend?
Oh, yeah. I think anyone who gambles for a living probably would find this to be the party of the year.
Because I love it there.
You meet everybody, all the people that you know and people you haven't seen for all year, and it's just a great fun.
Yeah, there's an energy in the room that is great. Now, you're in charge of Vegas Lit, which is the fiction arm of Huntington Press, Las Vegas Advisor. And the first 2 books, one was by you, one was called Risk of Ruin, one was by Michael Koenig. We had both of you as guests talking about it. Is there anything you can tell us about Vegas Lit?
Let me plug, since you're paying me so highly here, let me plug.
I'm taking you to dinner afterwards. What do you want?
Okay. Coffee shop at the El Cortez, but okay. Let me see. Whoops. Was I allowed to give that plug like that?
I don't know. I thought it was Denny's, but okay, go ahead.
Okay. You're paying. Let's see. Vegas Lit. Okay. What I'm going to say about Vegas Lit is this. Most gamblers don't read fiction. They just don't read fiction. They read technical reports, they read math things, and they read how-to books. They don't really read novels much. People who read fiction are just sort of a crazy breed of person, and I think you are one of them.
Yeah, I'm one of that crazy breed.
Yeah, I mean, I like here and fiction. There, but generally speaking, your average gambler, and actually I think Max reads novels too, but a lot of them don't. And I know that because on my Blackjack website, I get... we get more than 20,000 visits a month, and almost nobody shows any interest in the fiction book, and everybody has interest in pretty much all any of the other books, reports, everything that I've written. But I will say this about, I'll say something about my book and something about Michael Koenig's book.
Okay.
Let me start with Michael's. Michael Koenig's book is one of the funniest books that I have ever read. And
yes.
I'm saying, especially if you are familiar with Las Vegas and the way the industry works and the whole comp system. It had me rolling on the floor. I had the pleasure of editing that book. And it's one of the best reads. And the ending will just kill you.
Yes.
And my book, and I'll say this because I know you have serious players. You have talked about, I'm sure, playing hole cards on this show.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that there is probably more information in my book about playing hole cards. Not so much the mathematics of it. but just about the way the life is and the lifestyle.
Some of the signaling that has to go on, and when something changes, how you have to change your strategy, and
right.
lots of those little things.
Lots of the little details about hole card play. And it's very realistic. And I think people that are interested in that would probably, for that reason alone, might find my book interesting. But basically, I have to warn you, it's a love story.
It is
a love story.
All right. Now, the World Series of Poker announced its 2013 schedule today. There's going to be 62 bracelet events between May 29th and July 25th, with the November 9 finishing up November 4th and 5th. As it gets closer, we're likely to have Nolan Dalla on again, who's their media director, and he's always a good interview. Now, I'm going to be entering, if and only if they have a media event. 2 years ago, I won a bounty from somebody, and Seth, and I got earphones, which I use at the gym. So, now, Arnold, you, several years ago, you did pretty good at some of these World Series events. Are you think you're going to enter this year?
I will have to decide. I entered a few events last year. I think the year before I didn't enter any. I entered a few the year before that. Haven't done that well. The year before that, I actually cashed in, I think, three of them. Never had a final table finish. There's a way in which I think the World Series of Poker is one of the best poker tournaments on the planet, and it's one of the most difficult poker tournaments on the planet to actually make money in. Usually, if you're going to play an event where there's thousands of players, and I mean some of these events have 6,000, 5,000, 3,000.
Yep.
There is an incredible amount of luck that has to go along with the good play.
Yes.
You can be an absolutely fantastic player, but boy, in an all-in poker tournament, it doesn't take you much to get knocked out.
Yeah. And Phil Ivey's 300-1 or something, or 400-1.
Right.
And he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah. And look at Daniel Negreanu. One year, he literally takes player of the year. I think he made, I don't remember.
2004.
Three. Yeah. I don't remember how many final tables he made and how many first places. And the following year, he made nothing. I think he cashed in a minor cash in one event. And he's the same player. In fact, he should have been one year better of a player. But the fact is, it's so many players that it's generally not a good investment. Somebody that, say, is living just to play World Series of Poker events, you can't really expect to always make money. And since they come around once a year, you have to decide if you really want to invest the time and the money. So a lot of whether or not I will play there will have to do with that. If some big investor comes along and says, hey, I'll put you in, oh, sure, I'll definitely play. I love playing tournaments. But I don't see it as a really valuable gambling thing. Now, the reason I say it's one of the best tournaments is because there are so many terrible players in there. So many people get into those events in satellites. People who would never pay even to get into the $1,000 or the $1,500 events. They're just satellites running round the clock. That people are getting into to all of these events, many of them on hundreds of dollars, and these are not top players. These are people that just want a shot. They just want to play in the same tournament with Daniel Negreanu and Phil Ivey.
Well, Danny Negreanu is probably a money-making deal for him because PokerStars likely pays all his entry fees.
Yeah. Now, the big players who get their entry fees paid by sponsors, obviously, this is a great deal. It's a free roll for them. But, I don't encourage poker players, save your money and get into the World Series of Poker. I just don't do that. I think it's great fun. If you have a lot of money, it's a really fun experience. You have a very good chance of sitting down with some of the best poker players in the world and taking your shot. So you will find an awful lot of bad play, especially in these monster tournaments with multiple thousands of players and at the smaller buy-in levels at the $1,000, the $1,500 tournaments, that you cannot normally play against that many poor players. in such a big event that has such big prizes. But by the time you get to the end, you better know what you're doing, because the cream does generally rise to the top.
All right, let's talk to Max Rubin. Max Rubin is the author of Comp City, which is an informative and irreverent guide to getting the best out of the casino comp system if you're a table game player. For the past 17 years, Max has hosted, with the assistance of Barona Casino, the annual Blackjack Ball. This is an invitation-only party of the most successful blackjack player and other gambling professionals ever assembled. Tonight, we're going to be talking about some of the interesting and bizarre stuff that has happened over those 17 parties. Since Munchkin and I spoke about this year's ball at length a few weeks ago, we're mostly going to be talking about the first 16 parties. Max Rubin, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, guys, great listening to you and listening to Arnold talk about that. Was a really poor sales pitch on getting an investor. Arnold just said it's almost impossible to win, and I'm not going to play unless I can find an investor to put up all the money. So you probably didn't got a lot of buyers right now.
Hey, the phones are ringing off the hook here,
yeah,
Max.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I read Arnold's book, and I didn't think it was a love story. Well, there's a little bit of love story, but it was good. I read like you two guys do, and Arnold sent it over. I cannot read on a computer. I printed the whole thing, took it downstairs, and it was about 6 at night, and it was one of those they say you can't put down. I read the whole thing from start to finish, and I finished up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I wanted to know how the thing turned out, because it was... There's a lot of spirituality in it and mysticism, too, and I thought it was a great book.
Yes.
And as I told Anthony Curtis, you'd probably hate it, but I loved it. I thought it was just awesome. So,
Hey, Max, I want to thank you for plugging my book better than I do. Let me give one more plug. I should have mentioned... both my book and Koenig's book, the print versions are $12, but you can get either of them at Amazon, on Kindle, or at the Las Vegas Advisor site. $2.99 for an ebook version. So, I mean, hey, you can get a cheap one, and if you can read on a computer or on a Kindle or an iPad or whatever, go for it.
All right.
Well, I do the Kindle, but it wasn't available on Kindle a month and a half ago. Becoming Bobby wasn't. I'd already read yours, so... Anyway, okay, well, let's get started.
Where okay, so go? First of all, how did these blackjack balls get started? How did you convince Barona Casino to put lots of money up to host a big party for players they don't want coming into the door of their establishment?
Well, it didn't happen together. Back in the day, and this is 1995, MGM did not have Griffin books, and for those listening that aren't aware of what that is, they didn't have... subscribe to the book that pointed out all the advantage players out there. So it was pretty much hats and horns all the time when they had a big event. And virtually everybody on earth was there for one of the Tyson fights. And we were sitting upstairs with a couple of the other players, and I happened to know, just through having grown up in the business, and knew Tommy Hyland a bit, and I knew a lot of these other guys with the teams, and I knew some other guys that are in the Hall of Fame, and I'd gotten to know Jelko and who's in the Hall of Fame, and a variety of other people. And we're sitting upstairs, and we picked off the other team signals as their guys, the guys that are calling the shots, are calling their players into the game. So they're using what they call roving BPs, and they're wonging in, and we see what their signals are, and some other guys are picking off some other signals. And over the course of about 4 days, everybody's picking each other off, and it got to be a riot. I had one guy came up, and he walks into the game, and he saw me getting ready to bet, and said, "What time is it?" And I said, 13 o'clock, and the dealer looks at me like I'm insane. Now, this guy, I don't know from Adam, but I know he's been roving around, and he's very obvious what he's doing. And all of a sudden, more small cards come out, and there's two more, and if we're getting pretty close to the end of the shoe. And he said, "What time is it now?" And I said, 15 o'clock. And he said, "You tell time pretty good." And so he jacks it out, makes two bets at 3,000 or something, and it's all Rembrandts. They just hit the layout. He said, "Damn, you're pretty good." I said, "Yeah, you too." So we're laughing, and the dealer has no clue what we're talking about. And I'm bumping into these guys, and we're going over. And in those days, you'd meet over at the Denny's by the Sands and chop up money, and lots of guys would do that, and we would meet each other. And I was seeing a lot of these guys, and I think this was sometime around November. And it struck me that, you know, it'd be nice if there were a safe haven where all the guys could get together once a year and have a party. So I hit my wife with an idea. And I had a real big house back in those days, and I said, "Honey, I got some really good news. we're going to have a party for 50 or 60 people, and you're going to cook for all of them, and we're going to throw this gala event, and it's going to take a bottle of Dom for everybody to come through the door, and it's going to be great, and you're going to love it. And she, just like she normally does when I have one of my harebrained ideas, she said, huh? I said, oh, yeah, no problem. It's a done deal, right? And she didn't say yes, but if she doesn't say yes, that means, or doesn't say no, that means yes. So I said, we got a party. So I reached out, and I got a hold of
your wife deserves a medal.
Yep. So I got a hold of Tommy, and I got a hold of the guys, and so we pulled everybody together in the first one. And Arnold, you were at that first one, I believe.
I remember it was sometime back then, the first one. If you had one before that, yeah. And I didn't know about it, but
yeah, the first one was at the and I'd only been in the big, that big house about 2 years, but it was yeah. So that was 95. We kicked it off, and we had it on January 2nd. And the reason we had it then, and the reason we had it most of the blackjack balls at that time, is because in the day everybody would come to Vegas for the big weekends. And we didn't want to play on New Year's Eve or January 1st, so we took it one day past that. So everybody came in. The wife cooked for days, and we put together this party, got everybody together, and had these contests just like we do now. And the finals table was Wally and
Munchkin
and Anthony Curtis, the exact same three people that made the finals 17 years later,
yep.
Which was amazing. The final three guys, and the blackjack ball was off and running. I paid for it out of my pocket and said, okay, yeah, that's cool. I like having parties, so I have lots of parties all the time anyway. So that's a lot of people have different Joneses, and one of mine is throwing parties.
Now, Max, I actually think it was an advantage play on your part, because everybody had to bring a bottle of Dom, and you know as well as I do, gamblers don't drink. Nobody there was drinking. People are drinking water. They're drinking sparkling water. They're drinking ginger ale.
Were you at the same party I was at 2 weeks ago?
Max.
Yeah, they drink a little more, Arnold, but right, a lot of them didn't drink. Well, what was so funny, particularly at the first three or four, a lot of people didn't drink, and they did drink at the ball. And, you know, it's one thing when you're a professional drinker such as myself. You don't change much when you're drinking. You get a guy from MIT. He starts drinking champagne, and he's wearing the lampshades, and he's doing really stupid stuff. And he can't talk, and he's slurring, and, you know, this is fun. So it was kind of fun watching these guys with 160 IQs turning into stumble bums. And so we're having a great time, and the party winds down, and it lasts till 3, 4, 5 in the morning, and everybody said, wow, that was a really good idea, because we created a safe environment where all these guys, many, many, many of them who didn't know each other, and I was kind of the connector in the middle, came together. And the Australians were there, and some South Africans were there, and the Czech team was there, and the MIT guys were there, and the Tommy Highland guys were there, and our guys were there. And so it was really, really a fun event. And it was a place also where guys could bring their significant others and actually meet these guys and learn that we're not exactly the second coming of Al Capone. That, you know, these are real solid citizens and smart guys and nice guys and generally gentlemen and whatnot. Said, hey, we got something here. So the next year grew to about 70, and then it grew again, and I had to limit it when we were in that house to around 80 people, and we kept that going up there for 7 years or so. And then my wife was getting tired of cooking and doing all the work. It didn't bother me, but she was starting to get a little crabby about it. So one year my daughter suggested for Christmas that I would have the event catered. So I did, and I got the bill. And I said, well, this is bullshit. This is expensive. And he said, well, yeah, it takes a little work to take one of these babies. So next year, we're moving into about 2002, and I've been doing work and helping. And all my friends knew I'd always helped Barona. And my dearest best friend was the head of managing company down here through the days when they were just building it up, and it was a little small, tiny little bingo. And I'd always advise him a bit. So I said, I got an idea. Let's have a Blackjack Hall of Fame with the top guys, and anybody who's in the Blackjack Hall of Fame gets to come to Barona Room, Food, and Beverage for the rest of their life to not play there. And Barona, as they do with most things I come up with, said, that's a good idea. I said, okay, cool. And since we're going to do that, you guys might as well sponsor the party, too, and we'll make sure that anybody who comes to the party understands that out of respect to me and Barona, that they, too, will not play at Barona. For that year, at least. And whoever wins the blackjack ball is also RFB at Barona for the year. And they get whatever they want. They can come down and play golf, stay in the rooms, eat, bring their families, whatever. So Barona put up the money, and we expanded. And then I moved into a smaller place, but with a its clubhouse. So now we took it up to about 110 people. And kind of the rest is history. We've had it now at that clubhouse for 8 years now. And it's just a perfect venue for it.
Yes, it is.
And so we can set the table up downstairs, and we have the big dinner upstairs, and we can do the PowerPoint things, and we can do the introductions, and people come in. So now it's the toughest ticket in town for the night that we have it. And we have it, we do not have it now on January 2nd because so many guys do not come in to play when it's busy. They have their other games, and a lot of these guys made their bones playing blackjack, and they took their skills and started playing some other games, like an Andy Block moved into playing poker, and Arnold played a lot of poker, and some other guys got into the horse racing business and made 50 times more money than they ever dreamed of making playing blackjack. So there's all kinds of people developed different edges, but they all are still friends, and so we all come together. And that's kind of how the thing evolves. And so now it is a regular piece of every year, and everybody puts it on their calendar, and it's a really fun event. And, you know, Bob, you've been there
yes.
a number of times. You're the only real non-blackjack guy that gets to come.
That's not true. Bob Nersessian comes.
I take that back. Not blackjack, but he works in the craft of sorts. He's out there defending. He's defending the people that are out there doing the Lord's work, as is Bob Lowe. But there's a few guys that we have a lot of respect for that we invite anyway because you are a professional and you've got everybody trust you, and they know that whatever goes on at that place, you're never going to finger somebody, and that you bring something to the party. Because some of those guys also haven't played a little video poker, in case you never noticed.
They do, and of the Blackjack Hall of Famers, we have had most of the alive ones on the show. We'd kill to get Gross Gene, but I don't think that Munchkin says he'll take the under. He doesn't think that's ever going to happen. Now, they have a test of 21 questions, and now you have a Calcutta beforehand where players bid on it. In the early years, you had parimutuel betting where the players, instead of a Calcutta. So what's the difference between parimutuel and Calcutta, and why was the change made?
Parimutuel is exactly as if you were going to the track. And I would set the parimutuels something like this. You could bet on the Czech team. You could bet on the Highland team. You could bet on any woman. You could bet on whatever it would be. And I would set the opening odds, and I'd take a little bit of a risk there. But as all the money got bet, then I would redistribute every single penny, plus what we always collect 20 extra at the door, and I don't keep any of that, and nor does Barona, and that goes into the pool. So everybody's got an edge, theoretically, coming in when you make a bet. So we started off doing the Calcutta for 3 years. It was so unbelievably complicated without having a computer system to run it, and having I hired a couple kids, and they would sit there, and they would take all the bets, and we'd try to figure out what the numbers were, and we couldn't automatically post them or do anything. And I said, no, let's make this like a golf tourney. So it's a Calcutta. So a Calcutta is you just buy teams, and the number, the odds are what they are. So Munchkin has been the number one seed for several years after Gross Gene got barred, and it opens up, and we just start buying, and somebody, he was bid up to $2,000, and they buy him. Then the next one, Diamond Mike and the Asian Assassins. He brought in six guys from Asia that are playing. They're very, very sophisticated blackjack players that play all throughout Asia, and one from South Korea, and there was a guy from Hong Kong, several guys from Japan, some guys from Taiwan. So they came in, they went off, they got a good number. Then we had some former champs, then we had the MIT team, and we have a whole variety, the Hall of Fame team, whatever it may happen to be, and you just buy those teams. You can buy a piece of yourself back, and it sets it at win, place, show, and fourth place. So people start betting, and the betting gets pretty crazy, as you saw this year. The total pool, I believe, was 19,000, which, you know, it doesn't a whole lot for a lot of those guys, but that's still pretty good money. People care about who wins, and so now we've got the number, and people have bought these teams. After you purchase the team, people can buy a piece of themselves back. So if they can say, I want 5% of my team, you're allowed to buy up to 50% of yourself. And this model came from golf events. And this goes back 7,500 years is what would happen at golf, amateur golf events and professional golf events. Even the old Tournament of Champions in Las Vegas, they had Calcuttas. And Jack, or this was before Jack Nicklaus, but Palmer would be there and somebody else. And you would buy these teams. And you would own Arnold Palmer for the tournament. And whatever the number went off, whatever the total pool was, and they'd have one place and show or whatever it would come in at. So I set it up that way. Way easier for me to build ahead of time. It's just a simple Excel spreadsheet that's kind of colored, and then anybody can enter the data, and you know what it is, and then we're off to the races. So that's why I did that. It was just so much simpler and easy. And it was easy for everybody to see, too, because now we use a projector, and the things go on the screen up in the, or on the wall at the clubhouse and whatnot.
All right. So now you people take the test, and the top five move on. You eliminate one. And then you have bunches of tests of events. Now, sometimes they're blackjack-related, like how many cards are in a discard rack, or memorizing a sequence of cards, or counting down a deck quickly, or playing in a tournament, shuffle tracking, those kind of things. And right. Some have nothing to do with blackjack, like flipping cards into a hat, putting at golf, arm wrestling. Now, which, if any of these, have you decided never to hold again?
I've never decided never to hold one again. One I may not have again. 4 years ago, we had boxing on the Wii. And they had to fight each other on the Wii, and we had a guy, matter of fact, some people know him as old Bobby, I won't give up much more, and there's another guy that tips him at about 400 pounds, and they were duking it out, and I was afraid we were going to have to call the paramedics. Those guys both were gagging on their knees, fighting on the Wii, and that's how we got to the final guy.
Was really it the big fight. Wii or the Wii?
The Wii Wii.
Okay, good.
It's been Wii, but it was playing with the Nintendo Wii. I think Nintendo makes it, whoever makes the damn thing. But it was really fun, and it gets a lot of yuck. So I try to bring some in where there's some laughs. Well, we had one where Diamond Mike, has he ever been on your show?
Yes, he was on the show. We called him Mark Dace, which was a name he used when he worked for Stanford Wong on his scouting for current Blackjack News.
Yeah, I've always thought that somebody, he won't write it, but one of you guys ought to write the book, Banned in 50 Countries. He's been banned everywhere on Earth and doesn't seem to bother him much, and he just keeps playing. But he's won the blackjack ball a couple times. But, yeah, we have pitching cards. So this is the old just throwing a card into a hat type thing where you have to throw a card. And I put a spittoon across the room, and they flip, and then I move it closer, and they flip again and flip again. And being the advantage player that he is, they'd had one flip, maybe two, and everybody else took their turn, and he was going last, and he just wadded his card up into a ball and shot it like a basketball and dunked it, or it went in the hole, and he won that portion of it. That was the year he won, so he got some pretty serious booze on that one, but there were no rules at that time, so after that, there was no more wadding up the cards. The putting has been fun, and we have the arm wrestling, which is one of the most fun things. I really enjoy watching that. The year... the leader of the Greek team, who happens to be female, won the thing, and she's a pretty sturdy lady, and she knocked off one of the guys arm wrestling, which was awesome, and she wound up winning the whole cup, and she had come out of nowhere. And matter of fact, in the Calcutta, she went off at something like, not Calcutta, she was in Paramutual days, and she went off at something like 100-1 or something. She came out of nowhere. And nobody suspected that a lady would win. And there's been two women at the final table since. I think the highest place was fourth place since then. But
Anthony Curtis hurt himself a couple of years ago at this arm wrestling.
2 years ago, he was Anthony Curtis, for those of you out there that know him. He's one of the most fit humans ever. And I've seen him knock off 20 pull-ups, and I played rugby with him for a whole bunch of years. And extremely fit and could knock off 20 pull-ups on a door jam for most of his life, and it really fit. And he's going up against a guy we know as Mr. Yuck, who is a very big guy but didn't look like he spent a whole lot of time at the gym, like never. And they start arm wrestling, and Anthony's arm wrestling him, and he feels something pop, and it tore the tendons or ligaments in his arm, and the guy almost tore his arm off. So, and Anthony once again came in second place. So it didn't bode well for him, but it's fun to watch. But when we're getting of a certain age, people are getting injured doing it. But it is really funny watching certain people that we know. And Arnold, you'll attest. Matter of fact, the year you were at the final table, Arnold, I think you had to arm wrestle left-handed.
I believe that is right? Definitely true. Yeah.
Yep, and you took down Filthy Phil. And you remember that?
I do recall. How could I forget that?
It's a highlight of his life. Well, how could he forget?
That's right. call that.
I'm not a guy that works out at the gym all the time, and I you know, I would hate to try to do pull-ups and push-ups and things like that. So,
well, he went around for a year whining because he had hurt his left elbow, and I didn't know this. He hadn't said anything about it. He'd fallen off his bicycle a month earlier or something. His left elbow was out of whack a little bit. And the year before, I'd said right-handed, and this year it was left-handed. In case somebody was a lefty, maybe they'll get an edge. So you took him out, and you caused serious injury to him. So he didn't stop whining about that for years.
I lucked out. I just lucked out on that one.
Now, you mentioned Diamond Mike wadding the card into a ball. Now, advantage players are always looking for an edge. It's part of our disease. Casinos sometimes call this cheating, and sometimes the casinos are right. Now, other than Diamond Mike's wadding the thing into the ball, which wasn't cheating at that time, are there other players who have done things that caused you to change the rules in subsequent years?
Well, I've tried to change some rules sometimes, because, and I try mightily to come up with harder tests and have things that certain people don't know. But I, for reference books, I've used yours. I've used Arnold's books. I use Blackjack Forum. I use Grossstein's books. I use current Blackjack News. I try to get obscure books. I get these really complicated tables and charts out of Peter Griffin's books. And I ask questions that are really difficult. It's the same damn guys that keep getting them right, because what they do, there are certain people like Munchkin, whether he studies or not, he's so much smarter than most of the folks out there, and he can look at something and he always remembers it, and he's always in the finals.
Yep.
And I've tried to figure out a way, and arm wrestling is one way to kind of even the field for Munchkin, because he's not going to take down a lot of guys.
He's not a very large man, that's for sure.
No, he's not. So that kind of brings it up, and I make the joke, well, you got to be a manly man, you know, you got to be well-rounded, you got to know how to putt. So I tried to, you know, help like a Tommy Hyland or someone like that, and cutting cards, cutting precisely at 15 or 13. Well, Munchkin this year, you saw what he did. He cut exactly.
He nailed it.
Cards. Yeah.
Now, well, James Grosjean is smaller than Munchkin, and he's won three times two.
James Grosjean's a strong guy. Yeah, he's strong, but he also knows that there's a tournament model in this thing where you have to bet certain amounts, and maybe it's 25% of your bankroll or winner take all or whatever it may happen to be. And James Grosjean is also unflappable. We've also had shuffling chips and who can do the biggest stacks. Well, he doesn't get nervous. Now, there have been guys, some guys that are in the Hall of Fame, and Arnold has seen this, that have sat at this table and they have bet tens of thousands of dollars, come to town with multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're unflappable. They will do anything with the bosses there, and you give them a stack of 12 chips, and their hands are shaking like they're proposing for the first time, whatever it may happen to be. You've seen this, Arnold.
Yeah. In fact, I have a comment on that, Max, that chip shuffling. The times I've been at the final table where I had to do the chip shuffling, I cannot shuffle four chips. I cannot put two on each side and interleave them with one hand. I literally can't do it. And the reason is, and I believe I saw this in Ian Anderson's first book, Turning the Tables on Las Vegas, he said, never learn to shuffle your chips like a poker player does, because you will look like a good gambler and somebody who knows something to the house. And so I purposely... What's that?
He's 100% right.
And I purposely never learned to shuffle chips. And even when I was playing poker, I was like, stay away from the chip shuffling, because if I go back to blackjack, I don't want to absentmindedly start looking like I know what I'm doing with my chips. Now, I think I should have won the chip shuffling every year, because I actually had the best act.
The best act on shuffling?
We don't have the act competition. Darn it. Well, and you know what's really interesting, and I don't know that Munchkin's ever written this, but having been out as a road warrior with Munchkin, he's got one of the great acts that throws the bosses off so much, and he doesn't keep his chips in stacks at all. He has piles, and he fumbles with them, and he acts like he can't do anything. In the meantime, Munchkin's a amateur magician and a damn good one with stuff, and he can take chips and twirl them on his fingers, and he's a great chip shuffler. But while he's sitting there, he looks like a complete klutz, like he can barely pick up a card. So he's got a great act with that. One of the contests we have there is because most of the guys that have been out there and played and done a significant play, they played with teams. So we also have catching signals and passing signals. So we'll have somebody sitting at the table, and when it comes to the signaling, you have to pick a random signal, and the signal may be something like wait for the next dealer, then set down, bet big, or we're getting heat, meet me at the backup casino, whatever it may happen to be. And as you know, and Arnold, we've done this many times, and matter of fact, mm-hmm. we've might have even been out together once or twice.
Yeah.
So we have a sign language all our own. So you have to be able to do this within 1 minute while playing a hand, and you pick one of your partners from the crowd, and if you get it, you win. But the guy to your right also gets to pick somebody out of the crowd to pick you off. So they try to pick off the signals, and they say if they can pick them off. So it gets really fun for guys trying to match their signal against fellow pros and watch what happens when that's going on, particularly when the bets are on the table, because guys are out there. And 1 year I had to stop it because the guy who was picking off someone, if you try to pick somebody off and you're wrong, that person forfeits. And one of the people had a whole lot of champagne, and he had a bet on the other team, but the guy picked him to pick off the signal, and he intentionally got it wrong.
Wow.
And we gave it to him for being drunk. I mean, we didn't give it to him, but we allowed him to continue coming to the ball. But there were some serious, harsh words that wound up the guy who was fouled, wound up placing highly anyway. But it got pretty dicey after the ball up at the house. I mean, it almost came to blows. But as he said, that was a real chicken shit move. Well, the guy had a valid excuse for having done it, and I've always thought this was a great excuse because he'd be drunk. So, you know, don't blame me. I was drinking. So, anyway, that's kind of the funny
right.
thing.
Now, a couple of years ago, Michael Shackelford won the Gross Jeans Cup.
Yes, he did.
And now he can't get an invitation. And why is that?
Because we have a hard and fast rule. Anybody in the blackjack community other than me cannot come to the blackjack ball if they work for casinos in any fashion. Nobody from Verona has ever been to the blackjack ball, and they can't come, and they whine about it all the time. Well, why can't I come? And as Arnold will tell you, Arnold knows our casino manager. Arnold knows our table game director. Munchkin knows them pretty darn well. Grossing knows them very well.
Well, the reason we know them is because we take advantage of that. Come stay at Verona anytime. We'll give you your meals. You can play golf. You can stay by the pool. You can, you know, get drunk. And it's all on the house. And so basically, yeah, we know all those guys.
Is this Nick Dillon or Linda Devine or somebody else?
Oh, yeah. But I can't bring him into that room, because those people come with the expectation that nobody from the business is going to see them and recognize them and then see them again, ever. That's just the deal. So, anyway, this year I'd sent out the invitations, and I hadn't sent one to Shackelford yet, because the name had come up twice. I had heard that he was doing some work, and then one of the guys that's on the attendance committee, there's several of us, and he's adamant about this. He's extremely paranoid, which he should be, because he's extremely high profile. We won't use names on that one. But he said, well, you know, Shackelford is a, and I quote, casino lackey now. And I said, no, what was he doing? So I heard the story, and he was doing work for
Phoenician.
Some sort of analysis, some sort of advantage thing over there for showing them something. I don't know whether it was discounts, and because discounts are a major, major thing, I won't get into it. I don't want to give up anything that we're doing right now, but discounts are a vital part that hasn't been published, how it really works, and I'm not going to publish it, but there are opportunities in the discount world today, and among other things. So I was waiting for a couple more days, and then I get an email from Bob Dancer, and Bob Dancer says, hey, Max, can I bring Shackelford as my guest, because I invite people to come with a guest, but we also vet the guests. And I said, no, and here's why. So I sent something, and then I hadn't answered Mike yet, Mike Shackelford, because I was waiting to hear from one other person. I wanted to craft the answer right and be a gentleman about it, but just let him know. But because he had worked in the biz, or was working in the biz for the casinos, he was no longer welcome there. It would make people uncomfortable. I got an email back from him, and he says, Max, I'm not working for casinos. I worked for the casinos in August or September, something like that. And I said, well, that's precisely what they told me, and because of that, you can't come. And he sent me an email back and said, understood.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's kind of the way it is. I told him I'm sorry, but that's, you know, the rules are rules, and people have to feel safe in that environment.
All right. So let's say this is
real. 8 hours later, I get a friend request on Facebook from somebody I've never met, never heard of. Max, long-term fan, read all your stuff. Oh, I love your stuff. I just had one question. Why can't Shaq come to the ball? Or, no, he said, I don't understand why Shaq can't come to the ball. I said, oh, here we go. So I didn't click on and make this guy my friend. Obviously. That's kind of what happened, and I have to have, and you two guys know me, and I'm a pretty loose guy, mm-hmm. but there have to be some rigid rules as far as you just can't do it. We can't have people that are working for casinos in there just so that they're comfortable. Otherwise, nobody would come. It's a pretty fine line, just my being at Verona and still having all these guys as my friends and bringing them there, and they still trust me, and they know I'm not going to go out and, you know, finger anybody or do anything. And I never, ever worked for casinos in any capacity as far as advantage play. Long ago, I did work for casinos if somebody was cheating. And I told him that I would tell you if you asked me to look at something and somebody was cheating, I would tell you they're cheating. If they're doing any advantage play or they're just really stupid or they're really lucky, I'm going to say keep dealing. So you guys have probably all heard the story about the bum that went to Treasure Island and cashed in his government check for a couple $100 and ran that into about $1.2 million. Well, in the middle of the play, the president over there is losing his mind. And one of my dearest friends is the casino manager. And he said, can you come take a look? I said, yep, but I'm only looking for cheating. So I go in, and I sit on the table with the guy. And the guy hits a hard 17 with a 6 up, catches a 4. He's betting 2 by 10,000. And he is splitting tens, and he is making the most bizarre plays and looking like he's drinking. And I'm looking at this play, and I looked at the cut, and I looked at the shuffle, and the shuffle's, you can beat that shuffle. And I'm watching the guy do this and do that. And so I sat with him for a couple hours. And I go back to his office, and he said, well, and I said, keep dealing. He said, no, really, what is it? And I said, keep dealing. He said, you're fucking me. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it on the radio. He said, do you have a 7-minute delay?
Lawrence is over there with his finger, and okay. He's got you a couple times so far.
Oh, really? I've also said something else? I'm sorry. So anyway, I just kept saying that with a little grin and said, no, just keep dealing. And then once the play was over, I said, no, come on. This guy was an idiot. And they did keep dealing to the guy, and my buddy was smart. And before the smoke cleared, the guy finally got out of there with about 30,000 of the money he had all racked up, and he took that downtown to the Horseshoe and blew that, and wound up broken on the streets again. But that was my rule then. But I just don't have the time, and I don't have it. If I had somebody that was a dear friend, that somebody was actually robbing them or something, I might give them some advice. But as far as advantage plays, the casinos really don't know, and they honestly don't know what the sophisticated advantage plays are, and I'm not about to tell them. And a lot of this stuff isn't published. And Arnold, as you can attest, there's stuff that some stuff is published, but the real stuff isn't.
Right, very true. Yeah.
Yeah, what makes it really work? And it's kind of like the novel you wrote. The novel talks about what really happens between people and the problems that you have. And you know, the biggest problem you have when you're an advantage player out there is finding the people you can work with and the people you like and the people you can depend on and people you trust and all those sort of things. But it's just the little things that may come out. Now, hole carding is, except for some novelty games, hole carding, as in the days gone by, it's pretty much gone. Every casino's aware of it. Everybody in surveillance is aware of it. They've all got the books. They all know what the charts are and that sort of thing. So, you know, Arnold having written that book, it's not going to cost anybody. I don't know that it would cost anybody any money anyway, particularly since nobody in surveillance reads novels. Right, Arnold?
I tend to doubt anybody in surveillance is going to read that book. They haven't even read my other books, so.
Well, this is just me talking, but
Actually,
people in surveillance can't read.
Willie Allison was on. I think he's read everything.
Willie reads everything. Willie is sharp. Willie is the anomaly in the surveillance industry. So, Willie's a smart guy, and he's a nice guy, too. He's a real gentleman.
So, Max, I want to thank you. We're going to take about 10 minutes and do some sell some stuff. We likely will have some time at the end, and we still have a few questions. If you can hang on the line for a bit, we would appreciate it. If not, we will live with it.
So I can hang. I plan. Perfect. And you sign off at 8?
About 5 to 8. So,
okay. I'll stay on the line.
Perfect. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. If you're listening live, there's double points for another 4 hours today. The South Point will also have double points on President's Day, Monday, February 18th. I've already spent 12 hours at the South Point today and probably not going to go back tonight, but I'll get them on Monday, I hope. The free video poker class this coming Tuesday is Double Double Bonus Quick Quads. It is the game I play on double point days. It is the most valuable game, video poker game, in the casino, dollars per hour. We're going to be teaching that next Tuesday. At the Palms, the Friday and Saturday night drawing in February is called the $80,000 Golden Statue Drawings. The time for the drawing is 8 o'clock every Friday and Saturday. There's 10 winners. Top prize is $3,000. Bottom prize is $250. Two of the winners get invitations to a special Oscar party at the Brendan Theaters. The two times ticket days in February is Sunday and Thursday, and they've recently started three times drawing tickets between 8 p.m. and midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. Between now and March 10th, they are having a bingo-type promotion for both video poker and slots, going on 4 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. This isn't actually bingo, but it's a 5x5 card where you mark off squares for getting various hands, like specific four of a kinds or a certain number of points in a day, a royal flush, straight flush and diamonds, things like that. This adds a probably 0.8% EV if you're playing quarter games. There's four different ones for video poker, about three different ones for slots. The highest EV one is for quarters. Now, they limit it to a single line triple play or five play. But it does add 0.8, so they do have 9-6 jacks on a quarter five play. So if you can get a seat on the machine, this gives you something like a 0.8% advantage, including the regular free play. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest in February is going to be going on 5 days, February 24th to 28th. This month, the game is Ultimate X. Ultimate X is a 10 coin per line game where you earn multipliers on this hand for next hand. For example, if you get a full house on the third line of a 10 play, you'll get a multiplier of 12. Any score you get on that line on your next hand is multiplied by 12. I will be teaching Ultimate X on Tuesday, February 26th at the South Point. To win the contest, you need to be dealt royals or aces with a kicker when you have a lot of multipliers out. I actually don't know how to do that. If I did, I would be a very happy man, but I don't know how to do that. But we are teaching Ultimate X in a week and a half from now. Next week, our guest will be Peter Liston. Peter Liston has a book called Million Dollar Slots. He's won well over $1 million playing progressive slots. We'll be asking him how he does this. I've actually used some of his techniques, and if you watch me at the Palms, you will see me playing progressive slots some of the time. In 2 weeks, our guest will be MIT blackjack player Mike Aponte, who is definitely at the blackjack ball. And actually, today we made a guest. It's going to be a couple months off, but Michael Gone Soon is coming on the air and talking about his life with Benny Binion. So Michael Gone grew up with Benny Binion as a mentor, and he has lots of fascinating stories. So that's going to be a different sort of a show, but we're looking forward to that. All right, Max, back to you.
Okay.
If a player thinks he's a really hot shot blackjack player and he'd like to get invited to this ball, how would he go about doing it?
Only through a recommendation from somebody else. I don't take solicitations at all. Somebody may call, and we've got a nucleus of, we have 110 show up, and we have a nucleus that are always going to be there for around 80 to 85. And then some other ones, I wait before I send certain invitations. We always want the top guys. And then I'll get a call and say, hey, I've got a friend, or like Al Francesco will say, hey, I've got a buddy, and he played with me back in the 70s, and he was the original Gorilla BP, and he'd like to come with his family, and he'd like to have dinner with us. And I'll say, sure, of course you can. If you say he's okay, he's okay.
Yes.
And it's the vetting is just about that simple. And we talk to, I'll talk to a couple of the other guys and say, hey, you know, Tommy Hyland has a guy, or I'll talk to Tommy and say, hey, James has a guy, or Arnold's got a friend that wanted to come, and here's the story on the guy. And occasionally some guy will come that doesn't know anything about blackjack. He just happens to be somebody that grew up with someone, and they just want to be part of the life for one night and share that experience. And so they can come. So we leave a few seats open. And this year we had one guy that showed up, and he's a big, big player, and he knew some guys, but he's not what I would call a true AP, but turned out to be one of the most obnoxious humans I've ever met, so he won't be coming back. But he happened to...
Was he a big participant in buying people during the Calcutta?
No, that's not Don, and we can use that name. And Don Johnson is a notorious guy. It's been published. He won 15.6.
Yes, he's been on this show. Yes.
Yeah, and Don, and no, Don's a character. No, I like Don. I love him.
I do too. But he is
this other guy was a. No, Don Johnson's one of the great characters in the world of gambling.
I was really surprised to see Don Johnson there, Max, and meeting him. I mean, I was like, oh, this guy really, like, he just blew people away with what he did. And I had no idea that he knew anybody in the blackjack world because, you know, none of the reports I read. And I was so happy to see him in there.
Well, he knows lots of guys in the blackjack world.
Yeah.
Guys that might have even banked him on some of those plays that he made. So, anyway, something struck me as you were doing your commercials there, Bob, is how smart Michael Gaughan is.
Uh-huh.
He does the Barona model. He has great games. He allows people to know how to play. And he says, come on down, boys, because he knows a lot of your listeners are going to take every single little advantage, but most people are going to learn enough that they feel good about themselves. They play a good game, but they're not really beating him. And he knows that. And he's a savvy, savvy guy, and he knows how to market. And it's astounded me, many of the things they've done. The only drawback with Michael Gaughan is he's had so many people work for him so long that sweat the money in the blackjack pit so badly sometimes. I think it's cost them a lot, but he's always had good rules on his games. And for recreational gamblers, he's always offered a great game for players. He has good food. He has pretty ladies. He has big drinks. He has great value. I from my take, the South Point is probably the best overall value, gambling, food, everything else, entertainment, that you're going to get in Vegas if you're an average guy.
I agree. When they have so many, like in the video poker side, they have 10,000 games over 99%. So Coast Properties advertised they have 7,200 between their top four properties, and Gaughan has 10,000 all by himself.
Well, how does he have 10,000 with just the variety of games that you can choose?
A game might be 25-cent and 50-cent and dollar and $2, and there might be six games on there in each of those four denominations. So that's 24 right there. And so they only have like three. Anyway, we are out of time. Thank you, Max. Everybody hit lots of royal flushes. Good night, everybody.
And good night, Bob.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.